Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how are we doing?
Good. Ian Safar is here. Hello, Ian.
Hello, hello.
Ian, I'm going to need you to retweet something from the 102.5 The Game Twitter account. I have just put out a poll. Do you believe the Titans defense will be serviceable in 2021? Because tomorrow is the first day of practice for the Tennessee Titans, but today is the opening of training camp. Oh, it is so nice to finally have training camp here.
Merry Christmas to Titans fans everywhere.
You know, that's what Vrabel said to me today.
Oh, really? Merry Christmas?
So when Vrabel came out, you know, this is the first in-person press conference that Vrabel's had since, honestly, like the Kansas City AFC Championship game, maybe. I think they had an in-person press conference at the Combine, but I didn't go to that. And we all know Vrabel doesn't spend a lot of time talking to the media during the offseason. And by the time we got into any draft and free agency stuff, it was COVID. So this is legitimately the last press conference Vrabel has had at that facility since the day after the Kansas City playoff game. Just to remind you all of how long ago that was, they opened that press conference by having Dean Pease announce his retirement. Dean is now unretired and is the defensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons and has been so for 7 months. So today Vrabel walks out and he notices my attendance in there, you know, passed my COVID test apparently. And Vrabel said it was like Christmas or Easter, you know, I'm like the guy who goes to church on Christmas or Easter, you know, I only show up for the big days.
Once a few times a year.
Which I said to him, like, I'm Jewish, you know, so, but it's all said. But let me say this, he's not wrong. You know, I used to always have this thing like with Predators games where I'd call myself Stephen A. Stillman, because when I was in New Hampshire, I covered the Celtics. If Stephen A. Smith showed up to a Celtics game, it was LeBron in the Heat or Kobe in the Lakers or the Knicks in the playoffs. And Stephen A. would be there and he'd be down hanging out with everybody like just some random media guy. Like he was Joe Rexroad. And so I always said that if I'm at morning skate for a Predators game, it's because I'm there for a reason. I got questions to be asking. And it's a big game or something like that. So, but as I promised this year with the fan access to camp being almost zero, that I will dedicate as much as possible the ability to tell you what I see going on at camp. I plan on being there. I plan on being present at camp. I plan on, if I got a problem with these players or if I got a question that's bothering me, I mean, I will ask these players. I will ask these coaches. It is certainly not as convenient as Zoom has been, but that's, you know, kind of the job. And I'm willing to do that for the fans, and I know you are too, and I know this show is willing to do that. To tomorrow have a full breakdown at 2 o'clock from what I saw from the first day of training camp practice. Everything inside and out will be available. But so speaking of Vrabel, I asked this question about the defense because the truth of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned with the Titans defense, if they're just marginally better, this team has a legitimate shot. If this is the same defense last year that finished 28th in the league and 29th in points and couldn't sack the quarterback and got lit up by Gardner Minshew and Kirk Cousins, if this is the same defense as last year, this team is going to finish probably in the exact same spot they did, which was decent regular season. They beat up on all the bad teams. They'll beat the Bengals, or I guess they didn't beat the Bengals last year, but they'll beat the bad teams. They'll beat the Jets. They'll beat the Jags. They'll beat the Texans. But they'll get spanked now when they play Buffalo and Kansas City, and they'll lose in the playoffs. If the defense is serviceable, like the 2019 defense that shut out a Tom Brady Patriot team that really didn't do much, and when I say shut out, I mean shut them down. They didn't have many weapons on offense, and then did their job against the Ravens, and while they weren't great, they certainly were not a liability. Then I think you got a squad. Then I think you got a legit shot at it. So they know this. They made changes. They spent all the money on Bud Dupree and Danico Autry. They drafted Caleb Farley. They expect him, I would assume, to play. They signed Janoris Jenkins to play the corner position. They addressed depth issues at the outside linebacker position the other day by adding John Simon. So they have spent some money. And even today, Mike Vrabel talked up Christian Fulton about kind of the changes he's made in the offseason or the progress he's made. So now you feel like, okay, they got some corners. They got Farley and Molden and Jenkins and Fulton. You know, like, they got some guys. But again, is the defense going to be any good? And I asked Mike Vrabel, do you believe in this year's defense? Here's what he said.
How much, with the addition of some guys in there, and you know these core players because you've coached them now for, in some cases, 3 years going on four, how much do you believe in this defense? We know how much you believe in Shane because you stuck with him, but how much do you believe in this defense?
A lot. You know, I mean, a lot. I can't wait to watch these guys play, practice, perform. You know, because we go back and our job is, obviously, with coaches – especially you're looking at the negatives. You can remember every time you called something and they hit you on it or something bad happened. But, you know, when you go back and you watch, there's a lot of great snaps. There's a lot of great defense. But we have to be better. We have to be better on third down. We have to go and force the quarterback and make him be uncomfortable. And we have to cover guys at the sticks and all those things that we teach. Because, again, that's where the problems occurred. I don't think that it was like, you know, just miserable. You know, there's a lot of good snaps in there, and then unfortunately when you play bad third down defense, you're just giving them more opportunities, and you know, we know with more opportunities comes more production. So, you know, that's something that we hit hard in the off season. You know, we were teaching it and practicing it. So hopefully that will start to show up, and then we'll be obviously practicing it out here.
So he says he believes in it. And I know, again, what's the coach supposed to say? Coach is not going to come out on the first day of training camp and say, yeah, boy, I tell you, we really stink. But I was surprised at the assertiveness Vrabel had in discussing how he thinks the defense is going to be better. Normally, if Mike Vrabel's asked a question about something that he doesn't really want to talk about, something that is clearly bothering him, he'll say something along the lines of, well, I don't know. We'll just have to see this year. I mean, we haven't even had the first practice. I mean, I hope so, but I don't know. And here is Vrabel saying, yeah, he believes in this defense. Now, I don't agree with him when he says that it wasn't just absolutely miserable last year. I mean, it really was truly miserable. Like, it was absolutely, unequivocally, in my opinion, miserable. I mean, I thought they were terrible last year. It's the worst Titans defense I have ever seen. And that's saying something because I remember when Deron Jenkins was at corner and they gave him the nickname Toast. So I remember what that was like. And a lot of people were mad at Shane Bowen. A lot of people were mad at Vrabel. A lot of people were mad at Clowney and Beasley. A lot of people are mad at Robinson and Vrabel because of Clowney and Beasley. I mean, so there's a lot of different elements here. But now it's a new year. He says he believes in the defense. Do we? So that's why I put up the poll. And the question again is, do you, it's on Twitter right now, do you believe in the Titans defense and will be serviceable in 2021. As of right now, votes are just coming in because I literally just clicked send on the poll. 65% say yes, 18% say no, 17% say no opinion. So let's kick it around the room. Caroline, do you think the Titans defense will be serviceable in 2021?
I do. Yes, I do.
Why?
Because I think, in my opinion, serviceable means at least a step up from last year. And if it's not a step up from last year, then that's a massive problem. So I can only look at this with a glass half full mentality of it can't get any worse. So it has to take a step forward. And adding more on defense, adding bigger threats on defense, I think can only help it. So yes, I think it will at least be serviceable. I'm not going to say it's going to be good. Serviceable.
Okay, so in the spot in which they had a collection of nobodies, whether it was Clowney, and then after Clowney, it was like Derek Roberson and Tazar Skipper and Brooks Reed and just whatever at the pass rush position, they replaced that with Bud Dupree. Mm-hmm. Now, Bud Dupree's health is an issue for me. I know it's not for anybody else, but at the end of the day, it's a torn ACL. Guys come back with torn ACLs. Let's say Bud Dupree's... Okay, so you replace that with Bud Dupree. Mm-hmm. You should feel okay about that. Now, everybody else kind of gets into the right seat on the bus because Harold Landry's starting at one position. He's a starter. Roberson's behind them. He's a backup. They drafted Rashad Weaver. They signed John Simon. Okay, so that is a solid outside linebacker rotation. Jack Crawford or Daquan Jones, whoever you want to put in there, is replaced by Denico Autry. I think Denico Autry is a better player. In the secondary, they lost Kenny Vaccaro. Now, I think that that's a loss. I think Vaccaro was a nice player. But Hooker's going to move into a bigger role, and they'll probably replace the Hooker role with Elijah Molden or Chris Jackson or one of those guys that should be fine. I mean, those are corners, and Hooker's a safety, so that should actually work to their benefit. Then you look at the secondary. Butler, forget about Adoree Jackson because he wasn't here last year. Butler and the gaping hole that was across from him had been replaced by Janoris Jenkins and either Caleb Farley, Christian Fulton, or now you're back to the gaping hole. Because once you get into Breon Borders, and you're back to the same guys you were last year. So you have the Fulton or Farley takes that other spot, and then Molden's in the slot. And I can't even remember who played the slot last year for the Titans.
Desmond King at one point, right?
Oh,
they traded for Desmond King.
Exactly. So that's what you had. So you got to hope that all those guys are better, but it's hard to envision that they're not going to be better. I think the coaching is going to be better because I think they know, hey, if the coaching's not better, it's our butts. And they brought in Jim Schwartz. I mean, I don't want to sound like a local homer. I kind of think the defense will be better this year. Ian, how do you feel about the Titans defense and their availability to be serviceable this upcoming season?
I'm a little bit worried about early in the season. You know, Dupree's not going to be 100% quite yet. They're kind of relying on Weaver maybe to make an impact, another rookie at that at that spot. Molden, a rookie. Farley, a rookie. Fulton, second year.
Fulton's a rookie. I mean, he played so little
Fair.
Last year.
Yeah. Hooker, his first, I guess technically he did start some because Vaccaro missed some time, but his first, you know, role as a full-time starter, I worry it could take some time. And hopefully that's one of these things that we can see constant improvement from the defense this year throughout the entire season as these guys maybe get more comfortable and more healthy early on.
Now, here's the other part of this that I have forgotten about, though the defense was terrible with him on it, is the return of Jayon Brown. So that's another element where Jayon Brown is probably one of the better players on defense on this team. So I think that's what this whole season comes down to. Do I think the offense is going to be greatest show on turf? Rams or Indianapolis Colts with Peyton Manning or 2007 Patriots. Good. No, I don't. But I do believe in the offense. I do believe in Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown and Josh Reynolds and Julio Jones and Ryan Tannehill. And I think Firkser's a nice mix with those guys. And they've got a solid offensive line with a question mark at right tackle. But they pretty much have, barring injury, which is the most important thing for any team in any season, they have a solid and competent and experienced and high-end offense. Can the defense just be serviceable? I agree with Ian that they are banking on a lot of rookies. They're also banking on a lot of ifs as far as the injury bug is concerned. Not that every team doesn't have to deal with injuries, but Farley, Dupree, Fulton was hurt last year. Jayon Brown has been hurt each of the last 2 years. Like, that's a concern. The one thing I will say, if I had to put my hat on, if I had to vote in this own poll that I released, which is, do I think the defense will be serviceable? I think Denico Autry is a big difference on that defensive line. Now, I hope, now I'm not saying they're going to do this, but I hope, and we'll see in training camp, because Vrabel today was talking about how Tyrann Tart is a much improved player. But I think what you're going to see is maybe rotating guys in and out more so that Simmons isn't playing every snap. Landry isn't playing every snap. Clearly, Bud Dupree, coming off the ACL, can't play every snap. And I think having more depth there will make those guys better players and maybe give them the potential or the possibility of being serviceable. But as far as here we are, training camp practice starts tomorrow. Training camp starts today for the Titans. That defense has to be serviceable. You have to, if you're going to believe in the Titans, you have to believe that the defense can at least give you a chance, which for the most part last year, they weren't willing to do. And I think I'm saying yes, but again, I don't know. Is this some local homer guy talking, or is this the reality that we expect the Titans defense to have improved and to be serviceable. We're not asking them to be good. We're not asking them to be what they were back in the old days. But we're just asking to have a defense that can occasionally get off the field on third down. 615-737-1025. That's how we're starting today. Vrabel says he believes in the defense. Now, he said last year wasn't all bad. Hard for me to envision that it wasn't all bad. But that's the question. Do you believe the Titans defense will be serviceable this year? And then the question, what does it mean for the team if they are? Because that's what I'm going to be looking at tomorrow. Defense, defense, defense. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We are live today from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. And it seems like the two biggest additions to the defense won't be there to start camp. How concerned are we? We'll discuss next. And when is it time to get real worried? Stillman and Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're delivered by TriStar Moving, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Continue to be patient with, I guess, Caleb and Bud. Do you feel like those guys made progress from the last time you saw them? And then what's the process like?
Well, they're on PUP, so they work out. They go to meetings. They rehab. And they just can't be involved in practice or the walkthrough. And those guys are working hard to get better. And the same thing I tell our team, that everybody here has a plan. For most everybody, that plan's the same. But then for others, it's a little different. But at the end of the day, everybody's working hard to improve or get better and help the team.
There you go. That was Vrabel on Bud Dupree and Caleb Farley. And I will say this. I feel much better about those guys than I did last year when we spent a couple of days going, where is Vic Beasley? When is Vic Beasley going to show up? Remember, last year's training camp was weird. Like, there were no fans at practice, obviously. And I think it took a couple of days before the media was allowed at practice. And they had the conditioning week that led up to the start of training camp. And it was a very weird year. But they signed Dupree coming off of a torn ACL. We were told, hey, he tore it in November. It's going to take a while for him to come back. Okay, all right. I probably shouldn't get so worried, but there's so much banked upon him. They drafted Caleb Farley in the first round. Everybody in the league, at least up until the Titans pick, was scared about Farley's medical report. Stefania Bell came on our show, ESPN injury analyst, and said, no, I think I feel pretty good about this and that he should be fine returning and okay. The question we're starting off with today, do you believe the Titans defense will be serviceable in 2020? 65% say yes, 20% say no, 15% say no opinion. So it's not like it is a humongous lopsided, you know, yes, Jared, 88% kind of thing. But are we worried about the injured players, you know? And at what point do we get worried about the injured players? If they're going into week one against Arizona and Bud Dupree still not off the pup list and is going to have to start the year injured, that's a little not so sold on. If Caleb Farley doesn't practice for the first couple of weeks and he doesn't get out there until the Bucs scrimmages or even after that, then there's no way I can envision that he'd be ready to go for week one. I say that A.J. Brown pulled a hammy early on in his career, missed a lot of training camp as a rookie, and A.J. Brown was really good from the first game. So, are we worried about these two guys? Should we be worried about these two guys? And if we're not worried about these two guys, is there a point in time when we become worried about those two guys?
I think it's fair to worry about it if one or both of them is not healthy for week one. I have heard that it would be a little bit surprising if Bud Dupree was healthy for week one.
Is it, though? Like, I mean, again, I forget the day that he tore his ACL. I want to say he tore his ACL, like, November. I think I had moved into this house, and that was November 7th. My friends at TriStar, they did a fantastic job. November 7th. So it was after that. So probably looking like November 15th. How long does it take to return from a torn ACL?
I have no idea.
Like 9 to 10 months?
That would be right on the money.
Okay, so December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July. Now we're at 8. Mm-hmm. August 9, September, when you play games, 10. Like, is so it's a stretch, though, to expect Bud Dupree back for week one?
That was the last that I heard. There was a former team doctor that said he would be surprised if Bud Dupree was ready for the beginning of the season. Now, that was from looking at videos of him working out that were posted on Twitter, that he saw that there was Bud Dupree was putting a lot more weight on his uninjured leg and was really relying on that uninjured leg from a doctor's perspective, maybe like not really able to tell from the naked, just regular eye. Mm-hmm. But that is what he said. And I don't know if that has changed. I don't know if Bud Dupree has felt better. I don't know if that was completely accurate. But that was the last that I heard about Bud Dupree.
See, here's what bothers me about that, though. Is that, like, Taylor Lewan's got a torn ACL. Now, he's going to be ready to practice. He'll mm-hmm. be out there tomorrow. I'm not worried about Lewan for two reasons. One, Lewan's not on the PUP list.
Right.
But also, I know that if Lewan is, if he's got to miss some time, that I know that they've got an option in Sam Brailo, and they've got an
They'll
option
okay.
in Quessenberry, and they've got, right. With Dupree, I mean, he's got to be the savior. You know, when they signed Matt Duchene, when the Predators turned around and they got rid of P.K. Subban and they cleared up all that salary to go get Matt Duchene, I remember that they signed Duchene on July 1st. On July 2nd and 3rd, I did the radio show from New York City at ESPN New York. And I remember being in that studio at ESPN New York and having a conversation with Floyd, who was here, mm-hmm. and saying, does Matt Duchene have to be the savior? And some of these, you know, the Preds bozos on Twitter were like, no, Jared, they're not asking him to be the savior. And you look back on it. Yes, they were. They were asking him to be the savior. We can't score. We can't score on the power play. We need you to score. We need you to score on the power play. I look at Dupree. And I mean, I think Autry's a big part of this team that a lot of people don't talk a ton about. I love Autry. And I think he's going to be huge for Simmons and huge for him and huge for the pass rush and huge for everything. But, I mean, their eggs are in his basket. Mm-hmm. They have put their eggs in Bud Dupree's basket. And they are banking on Bud Dupree. So if Bud's not able for that first game, you know, how many games is it? Is it going to be the first four games of the season until Bud Dupree comes back? This isn't like when Jack Conklin tore his ACL and they had Dennis Kelly that could play right away. If Bud Dupree is hurt for an extended period of time, you're looking at Rashad Weaver, who's never played an NFL down, and, oh, yeah, kind of has a little bit of an issue also. John Simon, who is right now trying to prove he's better than a replacement-level player, like, that's what you're looking at if it's not Bud. And I feel like they are putting all their eggs in Bud's basket, so his return does matter to me, and it's not that I don't think he can come back. It's that I am anxious not knowing when he will come back. That's what bothers me.
Do you have that same concern with Caleb Farley and that he's never played an NFL snap?
I have a lot of concerns with Caleb Farley.
Of course. Injury aside, is that one of your concerns with Caleb Farley?
I think if there's anybody who needs a training camp, it's a rookie. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's anybody who needs to get acclimated to what life in the NFL is like, it's a rookie. That having been said, I think they went into this with the idea that Farley may not be healthy. So if it takes a couple of weeks or a month or something to get him back ready to go, okay, because Fulton can play that position, and they drafted Molden to play the slot. Mm-hmm. And
they've got more quality depth there. I think at pass rush, they have depth, they have bodies, but it's not Bud Dupree type of bodies.
They have no investment at that position outside right. of Bud Dupree and Harold Landry. They have no investment.
They've got a whole bunch of Robins and one Batman.
Sure, I mean, not even that. Roberson is a practice squad guy. Simon is washed up and a minimum salary veteran guy. And Weaver's a fourth-round pick. Like, there's no investment there that I can lean on and trust. Whereas going back to when Jack Conklin, you know, came back from a torn ACL, I had Dennis Kelly that I had seen play the position, and I could trust that Dennis Kelly could play right tackle. I mean, this team has got to get a pass rush on the quarterback. They can pretend like it wasn't a problem last year all they want. They went out and spent big bucks on doing it. I mean, I look at the two guys separately. I mean, I think they need both guys, Farley and Dupree, to play at what they are expected to in order for this team to really be a Super Bowl contender. But they need Dupree in the worst way. I think Bud Dupree said in one of his press conferences, I think it was a question TD asked, and he said, like, yeah, it's my job to be the guy. Like, it's my job to come in here and set the tone and sack the quarterback and set everybody else up and be the guy who you can hang your hat on as your pass rusher. And I want Bud to be that guy. And they've paid Bud to be that guy. And it's not like Clowney, where there was no indication that he could ever be that guy, because Dupree has been that guy before. But if he's not that guy to start the season, if he's not out there, now your improved defense that Vrabel's saying he believes in, now it's kind of like you're kind of, you know, Frankenstein walking it, zombie walking it, like, oh, I don't know how I feel about it. And that's where I get a little hung up on this, which is, I get it. You had a need at pass rusher. You probably liked Dupree more than you liked all the other guys out there. Carl Lawson, Trey Hendrickson, all those other guys that, were they guys? Were they not guys? And anytime you sign a pass rusher for big money, normally you're signing a B-level player to A money. And I think that's what they did here. But it's a big investment and you need results on your big investments. And that's where I get, you know, the idea of when do we get worried about Bud Dupree? It's hard for me because Vrabel is never going to update you on how these guys are doing. But I am nervous about when is Bud Dupree going to come back. And I think I get even more nervous knowing that they're not going to update us until Bud Dupree is in fact back. And then when Bud Dupree's back, sorry to cut you off, Caroline, when Bud Dupree's back, how long until he's 100% ready to go get the quarterback?
And will it be a recurring issue throughout the season that Bud Dupree's in for a couple weeks and he's got to sit out a game, he got overworked? But I think one thing that also concerns me is that week one game. The Cardinals are not a team that I am willing to just pass off and say, okay, no worries, this is fine. The Titans can afford to have a week of learning curves, can afford to sit Bud Dupree and Caleb Farley for one more week if their injuries are not at 100%. That's a game that I really do not want to overlook, and I think that the Titans need to be at full strength for.
So, sure, but at the same time, it's the first game of the season. A lot of teams start off 0-1 and end up fine. There, it's also an NFC game. So, as far as
true.
Its value
it's
to your
AFC
schedule,
implications.
As far as its value to your schedule, it is by far down there on the totem pole. Now, I don't like it because I think Seattle's the second week and I don't want to start off 0-2. And you know all the statistics about teams that start off 0-2 or 1-3 or something like that. They're not very good. Then again, there's a 17th game this year. But I think I'm anxious about not knowing when Dupree is going to be back, knowing how much they have invested, knowing kind of how many eggs are in his basket. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Continuity at coordinator with Shane Bowen being back. Not something I'm absolutely in love with, but it does exist. And it was different this offseason than it was last offseason for obvious reasons. How much of a difference does that make? Mike Vrabel answered that. We'll get to his response next. And of course, your response, your thoughts. Do you believe the defense can be serviceable this year? 615-737-1025. Stillman and Company, we are delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Several college coaches, Nick Saban, have said that the lack of practice last year, spring practice, hurt the development of defensive players, given that they weren't able to react on the field to what was in front of them. Do you feel like that was the case in the NFL, given the COVID restrictions and the how it changed practice leading into last season that made it more difficult for defense than offense?
Nick knows a lot more about defense than I do, so I'm going to defer to him. You know, I just think that any time that you don't have those reps and you're used to having them, you know, that's we were excited to be able to work with the guys that were here, either, you know, for the entire offseason or the ones that came in at some capacity, you know, throughout it. That's all I can say. I can't really tell you, you know, why or what happened because we didn't have it last year. I just can tell you that, you know, I saw some guys make some significant progress, guys that were here. Anthony Firkser, Tier Tart, Christian Fulton, you know, those guys that were here working out, you know, and I see them now, and I mean, they look different. They don't look like the guys that we coached last year.
There you go. That was Mike Vrabel talking about, hey, I just think it's better to have the guys that were working out here. Mentions Tier Tart and Christian Fulton on defense, Firkser on offense. You think Vrabel feels better about the defense because they had an offseason program this year?
I don't think that's the only reason why. I don't think having an off-season program hurts, but I think he feels better about it for more than just that.
I don't know how you can think you're a good coach and not think that more coaching is not good.
Right.
Like, I don't know how you can...
I don't know how you look at more time together as a team, more time with the players, and not view that as a plus.
As a mega positive for them. So, and that's another element. Again, we asked the poll question today to open up the show, which is, do you feel like the Titans defense will be serviceable? That's all we're asking. Again, serviceable. In 2021, 68% say yes, 19% say no, 13% say no opinion. Let's go to your phone, 615-737-1025. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caroline Fenton is on the text line. What do we have?
Trenton Dixon texts in and says, one thing that will hopefully improve the defense is covering players like A.J. Brown and Julio, being prepared to go against elite players like them.
So I've heard that for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to practice every day. Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl with the 26th ranked defense in the NFL. That didn't make them better. That they got to go up against Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Edgerrin James. That did not help them. So I hear you. But, I mean, you can't even practice anymore. Mm-hmm. Practice is not even practice. There's like five practices in the training camp that are actual football practices where they put the pads on and they're popping each other and they're, you know, blocking against each other. And they're, you can't really do that anymore. It's just not the same. And that's where I have a hard time thinking about the caller saying, hey, you know, because... How the heck are we going to know if the pass rush can get to the quarterback this year, which is the biggest problem the Titans have? How are we going to know if the pass rush is going to get to the quarterback if you can't sack the quarterback? So they're going up against Tannehill, and they're going up against, okay. But, you know, the one-on-ones, receivers and DBs, that will be fun to watch, and I will be all over that. I definitely think that's a big part. And it should help them. They should learn things in practice. But I don't think it is necessarily game-changing. I mean, sometimes it is.
It's not going to hurt. I think it may make them a little bit more prepared going up against elite wide receivers.
I'll give you an example. You know the guy who's a nice guy and nobody wants to say anything bad about him, but mm-hmm. he doesn't have, like, the aggressive bulldog in him?
Yeah.
Corey Davis was probably that guy. Like, Corey Davis was a good guy, a good teammate, never voiced a negative opinion. You know, took a lot of flack because he was picked so high and he produced so little and he was always injured. But Corey Davis didn't have the bulldog inside of him that A.J. Brown has. He didn't have that. Malcolm Butler, on the other hand, was all bulldog. So Malcolm Butler was a street free agent who worked his way into the Patriots rotation, made one of the biggest plays in the history of the NFL, and all of a sudden became a legitimate starting corner. But at Malcolm Butler's first practice in the one-on-ones, defensive versus offense, Butler took the ball away from Corey Davis for an interception, screamed at him, "This is how I make my money," and then punted the football. And I remember seeing that, and everybody, I mean, even the media that was watching it, everybody lost it. Like, oh my God. And yet, that never really ramped up Davis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that didn't elevate Davis. And so I look at it like, okay, can these guys learn something from going up against A.J., Julio, and Josh Reynolds? Sure. Fulton, Farley, Molden, I think it's great for all of them. But then they have to kind of have that inside of them too. You know, they have to have it inside of them of, okay, you know, you've flexed on me, now let me get you back. It's like those legendary stories about Michael Jordan, you know, would never want to end on losing one-on-one. And if he lost one-on-one, I think it was, who was the other great player? James Worthy, North Carolina with Jordan. And they played one-on-one after practice every day. And Worthy said that if he beat Jordan one-on-one, Jordan would want to play again until Worthy finally lost and then Jordan be done. You know, do those guys have that in them?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know those guys, so I don't know if they have it in them. And you can tell me, well, no, but they love ball, and Vrabel says they love ball, and okay, but that Corey Davis loved ball too. At least that's what they told us. And I'm sure Corey Davis does love football. I'm not questioning Corey Davis's love of the game. I'm just saying he didn't have like the bulldog inside of him, and I don't think you get
better. The relentless fighter.
Yeah, I don't think you get better if you don't have that bulldog inside of you. What's next?
Josh texted in and said, would the Titans have enough to bring in Justin Houston?
No. I mean, they're doing that with John Simon. And I know John Simon at his peak wasn't the player that Justin Houston was, but Justin Houston's peak was in 2013. I mean, I think you were still in high school then.
I was, yes.
So, like, that's... I mean, I think the sun has set on Justin Houston. Kind of like when they brought in Andre Johnson here and, like, the sun had set. The sun has set.
And that's okay.
The career of Justin Houston.
And that's all right.
And so as far as getting excited about that, I'm not sure I feel that way.
Yeah. Brian in Portland texts in and says, can we get Arizona to resign Jonathan Joseph? That would really help week one and get A.J. Brown and Julio and Tannehill on the same page.
Yeah.
Don't work that way.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Joseph's retired from the NFL because, like Justin Houston, the sun had very clearly set on him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate for all of us that we had to watch that in live time. But that's exactly what happened. I mean, when it comes to Arizona, let me say this. And this is why I said to you yesterday, there's all that talk about how Chandler Jones is unhappy. Now, right. Chandler Jones got hurt, I think, in like the first or second game of the year last year, missed the whole season, carries a massive number this year, mm-hmm. wants a new contract next year, mm-hmm. is in his 30s, so maybe his best days are behind him. But he's very – to me, he's the pass-rushing version of Julio. You know, now he's not going straight to the Hall of Fame like Julio, but he might go to the Hall of Fame. But he's a great pass rusher.
Really good.
Had it been out earlier that Chandler Jones was unhappy in Arizona and wanted out of Arizona, I would have argued go get Chandler Jones as opposed to signing Bud Dupree. Because they both come with a massive injury risk, but Chandler Jones is a one-year thing. Bud is a long-term deal.
And Bud is slightly younger.
That's the guy. When it comes to Arizona, Chandler Jones, oh, if he was a Titan, and again, I know it's a risk, but that's a risk I'm willing to take. Is Chandler Jones, I think it was like a torn pectoral muscle or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to take that risk on Chandler Jones because I think he's that good. 615-737-1025. Tons of news in the NFL as multiple teams reporting to camp today and tomorrow, not just the Titans. Headlines with Caroline. She'll get you caught up on all of that next. Blue Raider Blitz is rolling across the mid-state to a town near you. Led by Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders football coach Rick Stockstill, this community-wide event will be guaranteed fun for the whole family. Each of those stops will include food, ticket giveaways, and a chance to mix and mingle with MTSU coaching staffs and Lightning. Tomorrow's stops include Puckett's in Columbia from noon to 1:30 and Lee Victory Park in Smyrna from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information on where you can attend, head to goblueraiders.com/tour. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Just seeing this right now from Pro Football Talk as we were talking about Chandler Jones of the Arizona Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury says he is jovial and looks in great shape. That all being while, I guess the talk is he wants out in Arizona. That having been said, camps opening up all around the league plus the Olympics. So it's time for Headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman & Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Well, guess who showed up to training camp today?
Yes.
Aaron Rodgers showed up to Packers training camp today. He avoided a $50,000 fine that he would have incurred if he would have missed training camp today. He would have incurred a $50,000 fine, along with any other player that didn't report today, every single day that he did not report. So he showed up wearing the most ridiculous sunglasses that I have ever seen. No shame in the Viper game. But yes.
Are those what those are called?
I believe so. Vipers, yes.
Are those like the, is it the color that makes them Vipers or was
no,
it
it's
the
like,
style?
I don't know if that's exactly what he's wearing, but the Vipers are like the oversized, like big ones that almost look like you're wearing like a ski mask.
Sure, like you're like welding something.
Yes, like they're super shiny.
So I don't, like, what's it, oil dripped is what it's called when it has that like kind of red orangey reflection to it?
I have no idea.
So when I was in high school, I used to think those were cool because that's what Chipper Jones wore. And then my buddy Ethan would call me Dale because he thought I was like a NASCAR driver wearing those orange reflecting sunglasses, those like yellowish,
like reflective,
reddish, yeah, which were the color of Aaron Rodgers' shades. So I stopped wearing them. But I will say this for Aaron Rodgers. I saw the you see the concession that Aaron Rodgers is going to get out of all this?
I didn't.
Green Bay is going to bring back Randall Cobb, or they're working on a deal with the Texans to bring back Randall Cobb.
Okay.
Aaron gets nothing out of this.
Yeah.
Like, Aaron, like, don't let anybody fool you. I saw a report, you know, somebody, the Sports Illustrated media columnist, Jimmy Traynor, wrote something that's like, don't get mad at Schefter's reporting. So I clicked it. And it was, don't get mad about Schefter's reporting at the draft that Aaron wanted to leave Green Bay, because both can be true. And I'm like, I'm not mad about Schefter's reporting then. I'm mad about Schefter's reporting now. Because yesterday, Schefter sold it to us like Green Bay, you know, moved heaven and earth in order to get Aaron in here. And they didn't.
They didn't do a thing.
They voided the 2023 year, which would be, I think, when he's 41. They voided the 2023 year, and apparently they're going to bring back Randall Cobb. Whoa. That is not the same as he's not coming back if you don't fire the general manager.
And also, let us not forget that just because Aaron Rodgers showed up to training camp today does not mean that he's going to practice. It does not mean that he will play game one. I mean, the Packers could say, you know, we don't want you to be in pads until we figure out everything with your contract.
I think it's kind of the other way around. Like, I could see
it very well could be.
But I think it's
Aaron Rodgers could say, I'm not playing until we figure it out.
I think it's done, though. Like, I think it's done.
It feels done.
Aaron didn't have a choice. And ultimately, Green Bay is going to acquire Randall Cobb to acquiesce to Aaron's hurt feelings. And this will hurt the Packers. And I'm not sure Matt LaFleur will be able to deal with this. But that's okay, because that just kicks out one team that we don't have to worry about contending with the Titans. What's next?
Some more NFL quarterback news. Lamar Jackson said on the Ravens team podcast, The Lounge, that if the Ravens win a Super Bowl, he will change his number from 8 to 1. He said, I want the number one. That was my first number ever. My dad told me, get number one because that's the best and you're the best. And that always stuck with me. He said he wants to wear number 8. He wants to win a Super Bowl with number 8. Once they win a Super Bowl, he'll change it to number 1. And then he wants to win another Super Bowl with one number 1. And then he wants both numbers to get retired. Whoa.
Somebody might want to tell Lamar how much it will cost him to change his number.
Don't think he really cares.
I think he'll care when you tell him. You know how many jerseys they made? How many Lamar Jackson jerseys you think they've made over the last 3-4 years?
A lot.
Okay, the way it works in the NFL, if you want to change your number, you have to buy up all the inventory of all the jerseys that haven't been sold yet. So that's millions and millions of dollars for a guy like Lamar Jackson. I don't think Lamar is willing to do that. We just saw Aaron Rodgers, who won't even speak to his family out of pride, decided to sacrifice his ego because he didn't want to pay $40 million back to the Green Bay Packers.
And I'm not going to blame him for that. I would probably do the same.
No, I blame him for everything else.
I blame him for everything else. But not wanting to pay $40 million, I don't blame him for
that.
But
if Lamar wins a Super Bowl, Lamar's already a popular player. Any Foot Locker you go to in any mall in America has a Lamar Jackson jersey you can buy. Like, he's that popular of a player. Like, him and Brady and Aaron Rodgers. He's one of those guys. So he's got to buy every single one of those back. How many different Lamar Jackson jerseys do you think are for sale at the Ravens team store?
I mean, all the different color variations. You got the black jersey, the purple jersey.
The white jersey.
The white jersey.
The female style jersey.
Oh,
the kids' jerseys.
Can I just say one thing about the female style jerseys that are cut in so tight and are pink with rhinestones?
No.
Can we not do that?
Can I say something? I said no.
Well, can we just not?
Actually, you can say it. I just want to.
Can we just not do that? It doesn't need to be pink with rhinestones
on it. What's your beef with the pink rhinestone jersey? I kind of like it.
Do you want one?
No. But I said
I would gladly get you one.
I mean, I don't. There's a lot of things that I like that other people wear that I wouldn't wear.
It just feels so strange. Like, there were some suited up men in an NFL front office like, hey, we want to appeal to female fans. Women like pink, huh? Let's make them all pink.
Well, I mean, they also have like the purple Ravens woman cut jersey.
That's fine.
I got an email that was like NFL.com shop up to 65% off. So I
it's always 65% off.
I clicked it and it was like Mariota jerseys. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, nice. Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
But
yeah.
So the whole point here, Lamar's not gonna pay all that money back. Lamar is not gonna pay that money back. So I love Lamar. He went to a great college, got a great education, but I mean, come on now, listen.
But also, let's slow your roll before we start to think about the when you change your number after you win a Super Bowl and then winning another Super Bowl. Let's slow your roll down just a little bit there, Lamar. So the Oklahoma State president tweeted today.
Oh, she was mad.
She was mad at Oklahoma. She said that Oklahoma planning with the SEC for months is a clear breach of the conference bylaws. So the bylaw that she is referring to requires schools to inform the conference no later than 12 hours after any third parties attempt to induce a member institution to leave. Immediately and unconditionally reject that offer in a form and manner reasonably acceptable to the commissioner, which is a long drawn out and very legal jargony way of saying, hey, if there's a different conference, a different entity that reaches out to you about leaving the Big 12 and joining their conference or entity, you have to notify the Big 12 within 12 hours, and the Big 12 can decide if they will allow you to leave or not. So Oklahoma, in cahoots with the SEC, and also Texas as well, in cahoots with the SEC for months, she said, is a clear breach of the conference bylaws. But you know what I say to that if I'm Texas or Oklahoma? Who cares? We don't care if we broke the rules.
Well, a judge might care.
Well, Texas and Oklahoma have already said that it's still a possibility. I don't know if they said that, but I'm sure that they will. It's a possibility that they could pay the $75 to $80 million penalty for leaving early and breaching those bylaws. So I don't think that Texas and Oklahoma are too concerned about it. But the Oklahoma State president, her name's Casey Shrum, she is fired up about it, which she should be. I think it's the same thing with Texas A&M. You know, it wasn't a written down bylaw, but we had this agreement.
I'm surprised.
We were going to go this way, and you didn't do that.
I was thinking about this. Greg Abbott's the governor of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never lived in Texas. My sister lives there, and she loves it. But I have never lived in Texas.
Don't mess with it.
Greg Abbott's the governor. And I think it was last week somebody said that Greg Abbott was the only one who could stop Texas from leaving to go to the SEC. And I was thinking about this yesterday, which is, how many schools in Texas is this going to financially just ruin? And you have to think about it. Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech. That's three.
Three of the biggest schools in Texas, other than the University of Texas.
It maybe helps Houston a little bit, but it may not end up helping Houston at all. I don't know. And it doesn't seem like it'll do anything for SMU. So if you're the governor of Texas, and this is just going to absolutely ruin Texas Tech, and it's going to ruin TCU, and it's going to ruin Baylor. Now, I think Baylor and TCU are private schools, mm-hmm. but if you're the president of Texas, do you not think to yourself, or the governor of Texas, don't you think to yourself, wait a minute now, I know this is good for that one school, but it's ruining all these other schools, and I'm in charge of all of them,
mm-hmm.
so I might want to put my foot down. Same with if you're the governor of Oklahoma, though the governor of Oklahoma doesn't really have much of a choice.
Well, the Oklahoma State president called it a detriment to the state of Oklahoma.
And that's where I wonder where these politicians come into play, uh-huh. because they're the wild cards in all of this. And I do wonder kind of how they feel about what this is going to do to all the other schools financially for Texas to bolt out. And they're all taxpayer-funded universities. I do wonder how they feel about that.
And
not only that, I'm sure if you're the governor of Texas, you also get lobbied pretty hard by A&M supporters.
Yes. And I do wonder how different this could have been if Texas and Oklahoma were pretty transparent from the beginning. Would
well,
the Oklahoma State...
They never would have done that.
I know. They wouldn't have, but would it have had a different reaction? Maybe not. Maybe so.
I mean, it's like, for example, Colin Cowherd signed a big contract to leave ESPN to go to Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And had Colin Cowherd announced on his show, hey, by the way, I'm in month 7 of negotiations with Fox, I'm not sure that would have gone over very well.
But also Colin Cowherd leaving ESPN really only affects Colin Cowherd and a small group of people at ESPN.
It hurt ESPN real bad. I mean, like, and I know you got there. When did you get to ESPN? 2019?
19.
Okay. ESPN Radio. And I'm not here to take shots or whatever. We have ESPN 94.9. We love them. Go team. ESPN Radio a decade ago was a lot different than it is now. What it meant, it felt like, to that company was a lot different. What it, and the first big block of change, the first was that they did on their own was moving Scott Van Pelt strictly to sports. They had Ryan Russillo right there. The first big change was Colin Cowherd leaving. Because once Colin Cowherd left, it just wasn't the same.
And then you had Mike and Mike go away.
Well, you had Russillo go away. Then you had Lebatard move in. Then you had Mike and Mike go away.
And then you had, Lebatard leave.
And now you got, you know, Golic Jr. and a WNBA player. Like, that's,
her name is Chinnea Agumake.
And that's what you've got right now. Like, that's what it is. And so, and I'm not here, again, not here to knock it. I'm just saying that's what it is now. And that was a big, and I've had people, I've had executives at ESPN tell me that was a big mistake, was letting Colin Cowherd go to Fox. So, again, you just don't announce up front when something like that's going on. And Texas and Oklahoma were never going to do that. And the SEC had to keep it secret because A&M was going to lose their breakfast over all of that. And so they basically got to the point where everybody was going to cry about it, and it was too late. And that's exactly how it worked out. And Greg Sankey, once again, masterful technician. Those are headlines with Caroline. Coming up next, it was something that I just assumed was going to be good for the Titans. And now I'm worried that it's bad for the Titans. We'll discuss next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.